Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the radiation poisoning of America when we come back. You know, Americans today are interrogated, watched, measured, and counted more than at any time in our history. Surveillance and electronic record keeping of nearly every routine activity, from bank deposits to medical visits, has produced greater efficiency and security, all right, but it's also responsible for a very discernible erosion of our ability to live our lives free from outside scrutiny. Now, our federal government currently maintains an average of 15 files on every American, and that's according to estimates by the Office of Management and Budget. Closer to home, state and local governments use computers to keep their own files on us. And a study conducted by the New York Committee on Open Government found that that state, New York, and its agencies operated 1,776 separate data systems. They contained 10,799 categories of information about New York residents. And every one of those systems contained between 2 and 10 million records. Now, information about you is gained from 63 sources, and this information is gathered and stored in a very reasoned and logical manner for later retrieval and use. Now, would you like to know how your government, your bank, your insurance company, business and industry obtains all of this information about you? What are their sources? How is it stored? How is it retrieved? And what do they want it for? Well, knowing how this information is gathered and what information is being stored and what information you want to keep personal and private actually puts you in the driver's seat in your quest for privacy. Now, for more information about privacy and privacy issues, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. Let me tell you how to train yourself to be just as personal and just as private as you want to be. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free. And you can call us or you can send us an email. Now, if you're on the line, go to georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine. Send us an email request. Or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of electromagnetic hypersensitivity. Now, that's a big word. Electromagnetic hypersensitivity. What it boils down to is that we're being nuked. We're being assaulted with radiation poisoning. There's two types of this radiation poisoning. One type comes from nuclear weapons. We're pretty familiar with that. We've been told and we've been brainwashed and propagandized and we've been informed and some from the time we're little kids about this Hiroshima Nagasaki type radiation poisoning, radiation burns. And then, more recently, we found that there is a different type of radiation. It comes from radar. Radar. And people who were engaged in the military, for instance, in dealing with radar equipment, they found that their lifespans and that their cancer rates were higher than the normal population. We developed these radar ovens, microwave ovens, and we put them in our houses. And, of course, the people that have these radar ovens, we take a look at them and we find that their cancer rates are higher than the population that doesn't have them. Now, that doesn't mean that if you've got a radar oven and you're microwaving your popcorn that you're going to come down with cancer, because not everybody is as sensitive to this microwave radiation as other people. Some people are stronger constitutionally. And we don't know which ones are which. Which ones ought to be more careful than others. But here's a BBC news article here on mobile phones and their ear tumor risks. Using a mobile phone for 10 years or more increases the risk of ear tumors by 4 times. 750 people engaged in a study by Sweden's Karolinska Institute found the risk of acoustic neuroma rose by 4 times on the side of the head that the phone is used. So it isn't that just you're going to get a brain tumor, it's that you're going to get the brain tumor on the side of your head where you use the phone. Now that's about as direct a connecting link to a cell phone as you can get. Now in Sweden they have the highest usage or the highest incidence of usage of cell phones in the world, and they've been using them longer than anybody else. And so they're studying these Swedes over here to find out, well, what's the accumulated results? And so we should catch up with the Swedes here pretty shortly. So if you're using a cell phone, and this isn't to say that if you use a cell phone you're going to get a brain tumor, it just means that you're 4 times more likely to than the general population. Now, there was no increase in risk on the other side of the head, giving an overall risk of 2 times. Acoustic neuroma is a benign tumor in the auditory nerve, which can cause brain and nerve damage. It affects 1 in 100,000 people. So, only one person in 100,000 is going to have this happen to them, which isn't very, very many. So, why get concerned about it? Those who had used mobile phones for less than 10 years were not at a greater risk. Now, out of 750 people who took part in the study, 150 had acoustic neurons, and those 1 in 11 had used a mobile phone for at least 10 years. Professor Anders Alibon from the Stockholm-based institute told the BBC News Online he was surprised by the team's findings. The results show there is a relatively substantial risk, and we are hoping others will follow up our research. We do not know what is causing it, but the risk certainly increases over time. He said he would not go as far as warning people not to use cell phones. But he added, if people are concerned, the simple way to avoid risk is to use a hands-free kit. Our research shows that the risk is only on the side of the head on which the mobile phone is used. Now, at the time of the study, only analog mobile phones had been in use for more than 10 years. The majority of people now have digital GSM phones, which came on the market in the mid to late 1990s. Some of the people who took part in the study had used both analog and digital phones. There was no evidence to suggest solely using digital phones for 10 years would increase the risk or decrease the risk. Dr. Michael Clark, a spokesman for the National Radiological Protection Board, the UK's advisory group, said, it was a good study from a well-respected institute. And he said it is suggestive rather than conclusive, but we will obviously take it into account when we issue guidance in the future. And a spokesman for the Mobile Operators Association said that the mobile phone industry takes very seriously questions relating to the safety of its products and is committed to addressing public concern in an open and transparent manner. But she added, individual studies must be seen in the light of the total research effort into mobile phone safety. There have been other recent studies that have failed to show any link between mobile phones and tumors. 3/4 of adults in the UK own or use a mobile phone. Now that's pretty significant. 75% of adults. 75%. in the UK own and use these mobile phones. Now, in one of the reports that I covered for you, the author said, we've got to eliminate these phones. We've got to take these cell phone towers down. We've got to change this. That's like saying we're going to elect Ron Paul as president. That isn't going to happen. That's like saying we need to abolish the IRS and the Federal Reserve. That's true, we need to do that, but it isn't going to happen. There's a lot of things that need to be done that aren't going to happen. And that being the case, then where does that leave you and I? What are you going to do? And so as I mentioned in the last program, what I've got to do is to take care of myself. My concern is my cell phone tower, which is about a mile away. Now, I pointed out to you the last time that there are shields that can be put in place. And I've got a mobile phone. I live under fluorescent lights. I use electricity, you know, just like everybody else. But now that I'm alerted to the fact that there's a problem here, we need to be intelligent about it, and let's see if we can't solve it. Instead of doing away with it, is there a way that we can live with it and minimize the risk? Now, if I've got a choice here and I'm going to talk on the telephone, then I'm going to be on the phone for 5 minutes and I'm calling 3A from the roadside because my car broke down, that's a far cry from using a telephone for 10 years on the right side of my head and increasing my risk of having a brain tumor by 1 in 100,000 people. Now that's, you know, we're getting to the point of foolishness here, you know, just because somebody's going to come down with a disease. It's like the automobile. Automobiles kill a lot of people every year. Now, does that mean we should all quit driving automobiles because automobiles kill people? Is there something that we could do in the use of our automobiles that would minimize the risk so that we don't kill ourselves driving the car? Is there something that I need to know about automobiles and auto safety and so on that would allow me to use the automobile, use it safely, and probably live my life and die of old age? Now, not very many people that you know have been killed in a car wreck. If you stop and think of how many people do you know, I can look back in my life, I'm an old man now, and I can say I only know of 3 or 4 people that I actually knew, talked with, dealt with, lived with, friends of mine, acquaintances, people that I know, that when they died, they were killed in a car wreck. My dad was one. Mrs. Boynton was 2. There might be a couple of more. It's a rare event. It doesn't occur very often. I know of more of my family, more of my relatives that have died from cancer or heart attack than died in a car wreck. So, you know, we can jump off the deep end here and say, oh my God, we've got to eliminate cell phones. I don't think that's going to happen. But by the same token, if I'm sitting over here next to a cell phone tower and they're going to boost the power by about 10, 20, or 30 times on that cell phone tower, and I know that people that are in the radar business, people that have been in the Navy, for instance, working on aircraft carrier, working in the radar division over there, and that their chances of getting cancer goes up pretty dramatically, my common sense says, you know, I think I ought to stay away from that radar. So if I was living in a city and I had one of those microwave towers within a quarter of a mile of me, I would move or I would shield myself from it. Now, there are shielding devices that are spoken of here in the literature. And they're a little pricey. I mean, if you think you need to stay right where you're at and you want to shield yourself in place, you can do that. If you want to spend the money to do it, you can accomplish that. Now, the mobile phone industry has always maintained that there's no scientific evidence of negative effects from mobile phone use. Boys and girls, the pharmaceutical industry will always tell you that there is absolutely no reason to be concerned about Vioxx, even though they had to pull it from the market, and now they're settling after they killed about 50,000 people, are going to settle for $5 billion. They will always deny it at the time. In fact, here's a pretty good guideline. When somebody is denying something, you can just about bet it's true. You see, if it isn't true, we don't really need to deny it. I made this report the other day. Ben Bernanke, who's the chairman of the Federal Reserve System here in the United States, he was testifying before Congress the other day, and he got up before the committee and he said, the economy is very healthy, and you don't need to worry about a thing. Everything is going to be all right. And a newsletter writer, a guy by the name of Bill Buckler down in Australia, he picked up on that and he said, if everything is all right, why do we have to tell you everything is all right? I mean, it's like your auto mechanic says, hey, don't worry about your transmission. Your transmission's fine. It's going to be okay. Don't worry about it. Well, if my transmission is fine, why are you telling me that my transmission is okay? See, it raises the question that never needed to be raised in the first place. If the economy was healthy and sound, which we expect it to be, 24/7, I expect the economy to be safe and in good hands with Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve. That's what they're there for. So when the very people who are charged with the safety and the viability of my economic system tell me, don't worry about a thing, Gordon, everything's all right. You know, that's why when the cell phone industry says, oh, don't worry about it, there's no scientific evidence of any negative effects from mobile phone use. That's a damn lie. I invite you to go to the Google site, go to any search engine and just plug in electromagnetic waves or put in there radiation poisoning. And you'll come up with, Dirk told me, about 70 sources of information that are going to give you a negative report. I'm not going to report on all 70. I'm going to give you 10 or 15. Now automobiles are relatively safe. And they're safer today than they were in 1940. They're safer in 2007 than they were in 1960 or 70 or 80. They're getting safer all the time. We got airbags in them now. Yeah. I mean, they're building automobiles so that when you wreck one of them, you know, you can typically survive it. That doesn't mean that automobiles don't have accidents or the people that drive them don't have accidents and get killed in automobiles, about 40,000 a year in this country. What we're trying to do is to make the automobile safer. What I would suggest that we all think about is how do we make this mobile phone, this mobile tower over here safer? Could it be that we could shield the people in the community from the tower? I mean, it's kind of like living next to a nuclear power station. Is there something that the power company could do that would shield the rest of the community from the potential meltdown of the nuclear power station? Now, of course, if we were to come to the telephone industry and say, instead of all of the people in the community having to harden their homes and to build a shield around their homes, could we build a shield around the cell phone tower to protect the people in close proximity? Could it be that in San Francisco, California, where you have 542, I believe it is, 500 of these cell phone towers or sources, about 12 per square mile, could we shield the people from the tower? I mean, wouldn't it be simpler and easier to shield the tower so that it does not emit this radiation down at ground level? Let's emit the radiation up into the air where we want it. But let's see if I don't know that that's viable. I'm just suggesting that. Has anybody ever thought about that? You're not going to eliminate cell phone technology, not when half the people in the world, 75% of the people in Great Britain, the adults in Great Britain, 75% now have cell phones. It's up over 90% in Sweden. You mean to tell me that you're going to get the people in Sweden to shut off their cell phones and tear down all the towers? I'm telling you, it isn't going to happen. Meanwhile, back on the phone are back on the farm, there are cell phone towers out there, and they're going to boost their power. Whatever the power they're using today, they're going to boost it by 10 or 20 times. Maybe we should start thinking about airbags for cell phone towers like we thought about airbags for automobiles. There's a lot of things that can be done in life to make things safer. But the industry isn't going to pioneer it. Don't wait for the cell phone industry to say, hey, listen, we got a problem and we're going to fix it. They're not going to fix it ever if they don't have to. If they have to spend 10 cents in the process, it ain't going to happen. Now, there's always these watchdog groups out here, you know, that are activists. And if you want to join one and become an activist, that's all right by me. I'm not going to thwart you in any way. I don't join these groups and organizations. There's only so many hours in a day. There's only so much time in a lifetime. And I'm not going to solve all of the world's problems. I'm not going to solve the cell phone problem. I'm going to remind you, I'm going to inform you that there's a problem there that needs to be solved, and it could harm you. If you've got one of the symptoms that we've been discussing here in this series of programs, it may not be that you're nuts after all. It may be that you're living close to one of these cell phone towers. Now, here's the magic number. If you're living within a quarter of a mile, that's 1,320 feet of one of those towers, you're too close. If you're at a quarter of a mile from one of them, it's not good, but then, you know, it's not the end of the world. If you're within that quarter of a mile from one of them. Now, if you're living in San Francisco, California, and you've got 12 towers per square mile of your city, it's pretty obvious you're living within a quarter of a mile of one of them. There isn't anybody living in San Francisco, California, that's living within the recommended tolerance of the cell phone tower. That doesn't happen there. You're all being cooked. Now, you're being cooked very slowly, and it isn't going to kill you in the next week or 10 days. It's going to make you sick first. You're going to get radiation sickness. And as they boost the power on these towers, the industry is not going to shield the tower from your house. You might shield your house from the tower, but the industry is not going to shield their tower from your house. That's not going to happen. Ron Paul is not going to be elected president of the United States. And if he is, he'll be assassinated in the first year or less. I mean, we're not going to abolish the Federal Reserve. We're not going to abolish the IRS. We're not going to abolish paper money. And the powers that be, the people who are in control, are not going to allow that to happen. The people who are in control of the wireless telephone industry are not going to allow that to happen. They've got lots of money. They're going to buy every vote in Congress. They've got the money to buy every vote in Congress, and that's what they're going to do. Man, the Congress is made up of whores to start with. Every whore has a price. Kind of reminds me of the story of a guy said to this woman, he said, would you sleep with me for $100? And she said, you bet I would. He said, would you sleep with me for $50? And she thought about it, and she said, yes. He said, would you sleep with me for $25? And she said, well, maybe. He says, would you sleep with me for $5? And she said, what kind of girl do you think I am? And he said, sweetheart, we've already determined what kind of girl you are. We're just negotiating the price. That's where Congress is. Maybe it's going to cost the industry a few more bucks, but they'll just buy them, whatever it takes. When it comes to the health, the safety, and the welfare of the public, the pharmaceutical industry, they just go out and buy the votes they need. And the telephone industry, they'll just go out and buy the votes they need. Now, what are you and I going to do about it? That's where the bottom line is. Now, they go on to say, but over the last few years, experts have remained divided over the question of risk. That's true. I don't think anybody really knows at this juncture of time what the risk is than the power, but nobody's looking at it either. There aren't any studies going on. The industry, when they conduct a study, they'll conduct a study and they'll make a report that's biased in favor of the industry. When some other group makes it opposed to the industry, they'll make it and they'll make it biased against the industry. Now, the group that's supposed, this is the Federal Communications Commission, that's the group that's charged with protecting the public interest. If they were doing their job, they would take a look at it in an unbiased way and say, okay, here's the problem, cell phone industry, shield your towers, protect the population, protect the people. But that doesn't happen until something occurs, you know, like thalidomide. After you got all these birth defects running out there, well, then, okay, we need to do something about it. We did not take thalidomide off the market. We have not banned thalidomide. Thalidomide is still a drug. It's still in use. Still being prescribed. They're just careful now not to prescribe it to pregnant women. That's the bottom line. Now, I don't tend to be a moralist, and I'm not here telling you, you know, you ought to abolish thalidomide. That's a choice, you know, for somebody else to make. I wouldn't take it. I wouldn't use it. But then, you know, I'm not God. I'm not here to tell you people how to live your lives. But keep in mind over here that you've got two competing groups of people. You got scientists on the one hand over here that are looking at it and saying, hey, this is dangerous stuff. And then you got the industry over here saying, oh, don't worry about a thing. Everything's fine. And on the one hand, being one in 100,000 that's going to get a tumor on the side of your head where you're using your cell phone, I mean, your chances of getting killed in a car wreck are much greater than getting a tumor on your brain from a cell phone. I don't deny that. But by the same token, just sitting here hours on hour, you know, hours at a time, talking on a cell phone on your right ear isn't going to help you any. So instead of sitting here talking on your cell phone for hours, why don't you get one of these landlines? One of these AT&T 900 telephones. A landline telephone that eliminates the risk altogether. I mean, that's what I'm going to do. I'm in the process of making a change. Now that I've seen this report, I'm going to order one of those 900 AT&T telephones. See, I've got one of these handheld sets here on my desk. Until I got this series of reports here, I'm just as dumb as everybody else. But now that I see what the risk is, I say, oh my God, I didn't know that there was a problem. Nobody ever told me. See, the industry comes along and says there's nothing to worry about. Then along comes the report and says, oh my God, if you touch a cell phone, you're going to die in the morning. Somewhere in between these extremists, there's reason, logic, and common sense. So we have the extremists on both sides. You've got religious extremists on one side, and then you've got the secular extremists on the other. I was watching a program the other day, and we're talking about, it was Nova. They had a program on there about evolution. It was intelligent design. There was a judge there in Pennsylvania. Decided this intelligent design thing for the public schools there. And it polarized this little community. It's a pretty good story. And it shows you the extremism on both sides. You've got the evolutionary extremists on one hand. And they want to teach evolution. They don't want anybody else to teach anything else. And right now they're in the upper position. And then you got the religious extremists on the other. They want to throw evolution out, and they want to replace it with creation science. And they want to replace it with a new term, not creation science, but with this special design, I think it's special design or creative design or something like that. Anyway, the moral of the story is the judge was receiving death threats. The judge in the case. And he thought that was kind of unusual. but it goes to show you that there are extremists out there. I take a more moderate view. I do not believe in evolution. I'm opposed to teaching my children evolutionary philosophy to the exclusion of all other philosophies. I like to have some balance in there. And I like the idea of having special creation taught along with evolution so that you can see the ludicrousy of the evolutionary philosophy. If you only teach one, then you have this monologue. You don't have a dialogue, you have a monologue. I like to have a dialogue. I like to see all of the various proposals. You know, when Adam and Eve ate off of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they said, in effect, we would like experimentation. We would like to take a look at both sides of the issue. And now what we find here is that one extreme group gets the power position over the other extreme group. If the other extreme group on the telephone story gets their way, they will abolish the cell phone industry. You won't have balance. I mean, you can't have cell phones. You can't have microwaves that are shielded. You can't have technology. It's you either have it or you don't. You can't have technology. You got to be like the Amish. It's either no technology or you've got to have technology to the nth degree. You can't have any balance. Human beings are not designed well for balance. They are designed for extremism. That's the dilemma that we find ourselves in. So I'm not here to tell you to get rid of cell phones. I've got one. In fact, I got two. But I can see that my use of the cell phone over here is out of balance. I'm using the cell phone way more than I need to. And I ought to use it when I need to, and I ought not to use it when I don't need to. And instead of talking on the telephone for 2 hours, with this radiation device to my ear, I think I'll stop doing that. And instead of 10 years giving myself a tumor, maybe it'll take 20. Maybe I can stretch it out to 40. All right, I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law. From the scriptural perspective, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives. That can be accessed through the webpage as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, our sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or you can call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. 67. If you'd like some information on the specifics of the articles that we're covering in this week's series of programs, you can call the law school and ask, and we'll give you some of the sources. Otherwise, I will not take the time, effort, or energy to go through these individually. Now, radiation is harmful. Everybody's in agreement. How much radiation is harmful, there is some discussion. Some people will say any at all is too much. Others will say, well, you know, we can give you as much as you can take, and if it doesn't make you physically sick, it's okay. My observation here is the industry has the level of radiation exposure set so high that they're always in compliance, and it's making a lot of people sick. A lot of people is 4%. If you take, that's about 12 million people. And, of course, we could sit there and argue, well, those 12 million people are super sensitive, and therefore we shouldn't tear the whole industry down over 4% so that 96% of the population can't have what they need, and that's cell phone communications. I think I would go along with that second observation. And that is, when Jesus Christ returns and sets up world government on this planet, is he going to abolish the cell phone industry? I would think that he would probably abolish the nuclear power industry and nuclear bombs. I think that probably would be the case. And it could well be that there's a limit to growth. Well, I was watching PBS the other night. It was McNeil there. And we're talking about the growth of Las Vegas. They're running out of water is what it boils down to. People are moving to Las Vegas, Nevada. And when they move to Las Vegas, they build houses. When they build houses, they want to put in a lawn. And this lawn is out here in the middle of the desert. Now, for those of us that live here in Missouri, where it rains, we don't even need to irrigate the lawn. I don't even have a sprinkler system here in my lawn. It isn't necessary. There rains here. Now, if you want to leave Missouri and move to Las Vegas, you got to take water with you. And so the number of people that have moved to the West and the amount of water that's available in the West has so taxed the water delivery system out in the West that there's now a shortage of water. Now it's exacerbated by drought on top of it. And so they've got a real dilemma out there in the West, and they're talking about the limits to growth. Now, it would seem like to me that there's got to be a limit. You got about 1 million people living in Las Vegas, and you're at that limit. Looks like no more growth in Las Vegas. Here on the farm, we have what we call limits. And the amount of pasture that we have available for the number of cattle that we have is the limit. And the limit is one cow-calf unit for 3 acres. Now, out in Nevada, it's more like one cow-calf unit for one section, or 640 acres. And in some areas, it's maybe greater or lesser than that. And what that means is that if you try to put twice as many cattle out there, they'll starve to death because there's not enough feed, or there's not enough water. Or. Now, we recognize that when we're running cattle. I don't know why we can't recognize that when we're running people. For some reason, human beings do not see a limit to the size of New York City. Yeah, let's carry it out one step further. And when we're talking about extremists and extreme positions, we don't seem to be able to strike a balance between the need and the available resources. Now, there was a time when Las Vegas, Nevada was just a postage stamp type, I think it was a telegraph station on a railroad or something like that, about 1930, you know, before they put in that Lake Hoover Dam. Before they put in that dam there, Las Vegas was a nowheresville, little podunk village out in the countryside. Well, then they put in the dam, and then they put in some slot machines, and then they put in a casino, and then people began to go there. Well, there was plenty of water. I can remember in the 1950s and 60s, no problem. Plenty of water, and there was plenty of ground, and so the people, they expanded Las Vegas. Now there's 1 million people. All right, so if you can double the size of the place from 100 people to 200, no problem. 200 to 400, no problem. 400 to 800, you see where we're going here? Pretty soon you get 1 million. Now at 1 million, you're at the limits of growth. And so they're saying, well, what we need to do now is to go up north and run the people who have the water up here in central Nevada out of the cattle business. We need to take that water away from the few people up there and give it to the many people in Las Vegas. Okay, let's do that. At some point in time, Las Vegas will double from 1 million to 2 million, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16, and 16 to 32 million. Don't you think it would make more sense to move those 32 million people to Missouri where there's water? I mean, at some point in time, the thing is going to become unviable. We take a look at civilizations of the past, and we can see that civilizations of the past grew until they finally destroyed themselves. We see it in Babylon, Assyria, Egypt, and down in Casa Grande, Arizona, there are the old irrigation works down there, you know, ditches that go for miles across the desert. The Indians or somebody built those centuries and centuries ago. Go down to the Yucatan Peninsula. Go down to South America and look where the Aztecs and the Incas and the Maya Indians were. Look at their great pyramids. Look at their great civilizations. And they're all overgrown by the jungles. They grew to a level where they could no longer sustain themselves, and then they died out. Now, there's not enough water in the Colorado Basin to support 300 million Americans. Some of us are going to have to live somewhere other than the Colorado Basin. The Colorado River is a big river, and it carries a lot of water. And when the development phase was going on, there was 15 million acre feet in that basin running down that river. Today, in the heart of drought conditions, there's one-third the water. 5 million acre feet. Okay, so there's a limit to how many people that can supply. And it will not supply the number of people that are there right now, at least not to the level that they would all like to have, you know, adequate water supplies. So that means then that we've got to have rationing. And pretty soon the rationing is going to get real severe. So my common sense tells me that Las Vegas has reached the limits of its growth. Now here on the farm, we don't look at that as being the end of the world and that civilization is going to die out, because my farm will only carry one cow on 3 acres of land. We don't see that as being a real problem. We do recognize that we can't carry 2, 4, or 8 cows on that amount of land, but we do recognize that we can sustain one cow calf on 3 acres forever. And it could well be that you could sustain 1 million people in Las Vegas, Nevada forever. It could be that you could sustain 11 million people in Los Angeles forever. But boys and girls, when Los Angeles moves from 11 million to 22 million to 44 million to 88 million, I'm telling you that there's a limit. I don't know where the limit is. But there's a limit out there somewhere. Now that's where we're at with cell phones. there's a limit out here somewhere. I don't know where that limit is. Now, with electrical power, in 1882, Thomas Edison started the first electric power generation system in New York City in 1882. And from that modest beginning, we now have nuclear power stations that generate megawatts of electric power. We are now burning coal at a rate that just boggles your mind. You need to go out to Nebraska and get on Old Highway 30. And right next to Old Highway 30 are four train tracks. Four train tracks. That's the Union Pacific Railroad. They have three train tracks headed east and one train track headed west. Well, the truth is the train tracks actually head in both directions at the same time, but my point is this. Every 15 minutes on the eastbound three tracks, there's a train with 109 cars of coal. Did you hear me? Listen to it again. Eastbound, there's three tracks loaded with coal trains with 109 cars each. These are called captive trains. At least that's how many cars were in the trains when I looked at it, and there might be more cars now or less, but in every 15 minutes on those three tracks, there's a loaded train load of coal headed east to some power plant someplace coming out of Wyoming. We have enough coal out there in Wyoming that we can burn coal. Oh God, it's in the thousands of years. I mean, we're not talking hundreds of years, talking thousands. They got the Powder River Basin out there. They got coal seams out there that are a quarter of a mile deep. 10,000 square miles in size. I mean, it's as big as New England, coal seams. So we got plenty of coal. Now there's a question in my mind as to how much of that coal can be burned into our atmosphere before we would consume all of the oxygen on planet Earth. And there's another factor that comes into play. Just because we have it, does that mean we should do it? Just because we can double the size of the city of Las Vegas, does that mean that we should? Just because we can crowd 80,000 cows onto 640 acres and call it a feedlot, does that mean that we should do that? You see, the pollution that comes from this industrial farming, the pollution that comes from a city the size of New York or Los Angeles, has debilitating effects on the health of the people that live there. Now, I'm sure that the people that live there are sitting there saying, well, we like it just the way it is, Gordon, so why don't you butt out and go live your life someplace else? You're exactly correct, partner, and that's exactly what I did. I took a look at New York when I was there and I said, this ain't fit for man or beast. I did the same thing when I saw Los Angeles. I said, you people have to be insane to live in this kind of an environment. But people who are insane cannot diagnose their own insanity. You require somebody from an outside source to take a look at these people and say, oh my God, these people don't recognize what they're doing to themselves. 600,000 people live in San Francisco, California. You've got 12 of these radiation towers, 12 of these microwave towers for every square mile of the city. I've got one over here a mile away, and I'm concerned about it. You people have 12 per square mile and don't know there's a problem. There's a limit to how many microwaves you can be subjected to. That's where the debate is. It's not that anybody fails to recognize that there's a problem with the microwave emissions. The telephone industry says, don't worry, everything's fine. And then the hand ringers are sitting over here saying, oh my God, if you're within a quarter of a mile of one of them, much less a quarter of a mile of of 12 of them, that's debilitating. Let's abolish them. But I'm pointing out here that there's a limit to how many you should have, and just because there's a limit does not mean that there's an end to the world here. What you do is you reach the limit and then you stop it. That's all. All of my neighbors around me over here all recognize that there's a limit to how many cows that this land will support. Now, I remember old Joe Toasty out in Eel River Valley. He was out on Lighthouse Road. He had 40 acres and 40 cows. He was milking 40 cows and 40 acres and made all of his hay. It was the closest managed dairy farm in the Eel River Valley. Nobody else could carry a cow to the acre. Only Joe Toasty could do that. Now, in theory, everybody else could have, had they put forth the time, effort, and energy. But not even Joe Toasty would have come to the conclusion that, well, if I can do a cow to the acre, I can do two cows to the acre. Four cows to the acre, eight cows to the acre. That isn't going to happen. There's a limit. And when you reach that limit and you try to exceed it, then you get sickness and disease in your herd. You get starvation. You get a breakdown. The thing grows until there's a point at which it's unsustainable, and then it disintegrates and unravels. Before you get to the disintegration stage, before you get to the breakdown stage, can't we see that we have reached the limit of growth? And then just stop it right there. For instance, in Las Vegas, 1 million is the limit to the growth, from what I can see from the experts reporting. But they want to grow Las Vegas from 1 to 2 million. Well, it'll be at the expense of somebody else. It'll be at the expense of lawns and gardens. It'll be at the expense of rationing. All right? So when you get to 2 million, is that where you're going to say, okay, we've reached the limit? Or will you then say, well, now we need to pipe water from Jefferson City, Missouri? And I'm asking the question, why don't you stop the limits of growth at 1 million in Las Vegas? And then concentrate on moving the population or growing the population where there's more water. Why don't you establish the population growth around Jefferson City, Missouri? Why don't you aim it at a place that can sustain that number of people? Rather than pipe water from Missouri to southern Nevada, why don't you establish cities in Missouri that can sustain that population? That's what cattlemen do. That's what a sheep grower does. That's what a strawberry farmer does. I mean, we all would like to get, twice as much production off of the same unit. But, you know, we work at that until we achieve that goal, and then we say, okay, well, now we've reached that limit. So let's live within it. We don't sit here and say, well, my God, the end of the world is upon us because we can't double our production on this particular location. So for the people now that have cell phones, there's a limit to how many cell phone towers we can put in San Francisco. Let's try it. If we've reached the limit and we call it 12 today, how about 24, 48, or 96 of these towers per square mile? Is that when the cell phone industry is going to say, oh my God, we have thousands of people dying in the streets from radiation poisoning? Even we now have to admit that 96 cell phone towers per square mile is more than the city of San Francisco can stand. It obviously, at the number 12, has not reached its saturation point. But I would suggest that 12 per square mile in San Francisco is probably way more than is healthful for the people that live there. Just my common sense says that, based upon the hand-wringers that tell me that we're being slowly cooked by these microwaves. You people in San Francisco are getting cooked faster than we are out here in Isabella, Missouri. We're getting cooked slowly here. You're getting cooked faster there. If my common sense tells me, do we have to abandon San Francisco? Do you have to abandon what's already there, or can we logically live within the growth parameters, the limits to growth, which are obviously there somewhere? We reach the limits of growth in the Yucatan Peninsula. We can see that by the destroyed Mayan civilization. We reach the limits of growth in the Andes Mountains when the Aztecs and the Incas disappeared, didn't we? The Indians in Casa Grande, New Mexico, who built all of those irrigation ditches, disappeared. They reached the limits of their growth. They got to a point where they built a civilization dependent upon irrigation. And when the droughts came, the irrigation would not sustain the population, and they all died. I don't know where the limit is in Las Vegas, but there's one there somewhere. And I don't know what the limits to the microwave towers are in San Francisco, but it's there somewhere. Then what I would suggest is that we look at these limits and then ask ourselves, is this where we want to live, where there's 12 microwave towers per square mile? My answer to that is a resounding absolutely not. I'm not going to live there. Does that mean that 600,000 people in San Francisco are all going to move? No, they're going to stay right there until it kills them. They're not going to move. Any more than the Maya Indians are going to recognize a limit to their growth and stop their civilization at a limit. They can't see it, they didn't. People who are insane cannot diagnose themselves. So I'm not going to move to San Francisco. The people in San Francisco aren't going to move. There will be survivors. There always have been. Just because the Titanic hits an iceberg doesn't mean everybody's going to die. It just means there's going to be a bunch of them. There's a solution to the problem, and it's my contention that you need to reach that solution to the problem for yourself as an individual, because that solution is not going to be reached by the telecommunications industry, and it's not going to be reached by the people that it serves. Both of them are blind guides of the blind, and when the blind lead the blind, they both fall in the ditch. That's been the history of mankind. There's a limit to growth. What we need to find out is, where is it? Yeah, I'm out of time again. I got to leave it right there and remind you that you are listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling. The number to call is 417-273-4967. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. For your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Our time's up. We got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.